Welcome to Just a Minute. Parsons, and as the minute walls fade away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but around the world. I've been waiting for that for about 20 years. And also to welcome to the programme four dynamic, talented individuals who are going to show their skill with words and language as they try and speak on the subject that I give them, and they try and do that without hesitation, repetition or deviation. And they are, seated on my right, Paul Merton and Pam Ayres, and seated on my left, Jan Ravens and Stephen Fry. Please welcome all four of them. Beside me is Sarah Sharp, who's going to help with the score, run the stopwatch and blow the whistle. And we'll begin the show this week with Stephen Fry. Here's a lovely one for you. It was a dark and stormy night. Take that subject if you can. 60 seconds if you need it, starting now.
It was a dark and stormy night, are often cited as the worst opening lines of any novel. It was actually written, I think, by Edward Bulwer Lytton, and there's a prize in his name for the worst beginning to any particular piece.
All right, Pam Janet.
Was there a repetition of worst?
That's right, there was. It's the worst.
Well, I am a silly billy, aren't I? Honestly. That was the worst beginning to any round of Just a Minute. Any of us can remember.
We enjoyed what you said, but unfortunately you made a mistake. Yeah. Pam picked it up. 44 seconds if you want it, Pam. It was a dark and stormy night, starting now.
I'm not very good at making up things on the spur of the moment, but something has come to me. It was a dark and stormy night. The mood was melancholy. Along came Nicholas Parsons with a flashlight and a brolly. Not bad, but it is universally despised as a rather an imaginative opening to any kind of story. But myself, I believe it set the scene. It is rather creepy and eerie.
Run out of steam. Paul challenged.
A slight hesitation.
I think there was, Paul, yes. So you got in with 11 seconds to go, a point for a correct challenge. It was a dark and stormy night, starting now.
It was a dark and stormy night as myself and Nicholas Parsons explored the back alleyways of Cairo. We were looking for a woman we only knew as Nellie. There she was, leaning out of her balcony as she whispered...
And now you will never know. So Paul Merton, speaking of the whistle, went and gained that extra point. And what's the situation? Oh, Paul Merton's in the lead. 2 points then, Pam Ayres. And Jan Ravens, will you begin the next round? The subject, the whistle. 60 seconds, starting now.
I always dread the whistle because it reminds me of school and the PE lesson. I did not like sport and I was not good at it. The whistle is a noise that men used to make when they are on building sites, and it's called a wolf whistle. And this is made, it's two different tones of the whistle, and it experiences... No, it doesn't experience it.
Pam, you've challenged.
Hesitation.
Yes, it was. Got utterly confused there, but delightful.
It's all right, Nicholas. Pipe down. Stop being nasty to me. Isn't he being nasty to me?
I say things to try and get a little bit of humorous reaction, and there's nothing personal because I love you all. You know that.
Oh. Thank you.
And you in particular.
Thank you. That's very reassuring. I guess you always hurt the one you love.
And also, I have great envy for you because, you see, I started in show business as an impersonator.
Oh, did you?
I did, yes.
Who,
I became
who was,
a Carol
who was
Levers,
your best?
Napoleon.
I became
a Carol Levers.
So, you have 35 seconds, Pam, on the whistle starting now.
I have a tin whistle at home, which I bought in Ireland and which is emblazoned with the Guinness emblem. And upon it, I can play various tunes. One is A Dew Sweet Lovely Nancy, and the other is The Last Leviathan, a song about a whale immortalised by the great Sean Cannon. Another use of whistle is in Cockney rhyming slang, where they might say trouble and strife to represent wife, for instance, and other kind of phrases which I have never actually heard.
The Pam Ayres was speaking as the whistle went. and gains an extra point for doing so, and she's taken the lead at the end of the round. And Pam, we're back with you to begin. The subject is the garden shed. Sure you have one or maybe more, starting now.
My father's garden shed was gross and ugly, painted in black creosote with a corrugated iron roof and a mean, slitty window upon which chicken wire had been stretched. Inside was a complete range of shoe repair kit, old bicycles, a bayonet, a harpoon, and various kinds of trap for catching innocent creatures like moles, rabbits, pheasants, and all manner of creatures.
Dan, you anticipated, yes.
It was a bit of hesitation, I think.
Yeah, it was. I got in a muddle.
But it was such a lovely... It sounded like a brilliant shed.
Jan,
I never got to the German helmet and the ammunition box.
Is that right. Something that he trapped in the woods?
So, Jan, correct challenge. Another point to you. 26 seconds are still available. The garden shed starting now.
I love a garden shed, and I particularly like them when they have been feminised in that dinky way where people have put up bunting and have a little mobile hob in there where they can...
Pam Challenge.
No, that's not a proper shed. You want one with bayonets, hardwoods, etc. That's altogether too twee.
We enjoyed the interruption, but to give you a bonus point for that... But she was interrupted. So, Jan, you have another point, and 14 seconds available. The garden shed starting now.
The garden shed is one of those places where men can retreat into what they call a man cave, where they keep tools and maybe all sorts of rather dodgy items that they don't want their wives to see. This is a very stereotypical...
So, Jan Ravens was then speaking as the whistle went. Gained an extra point for doing so. She's moved forward. She's one behind our leader, Pam Ayres. And, Paul, it's your turn to begin. And the subject we've got here is horror films. Try and talk on the subject if you can, starting now.
One of the first very significant horror films was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, made in 1921, starring John Barrymore. But if we talk about horror films, we think of the monster movies that were very popularly made in the 1930s. Universal, Frankenstein, Dracula, The Mummy. These were huge hits. The werewolf later on in that decade. Boris Karloff played the eponymous title in the first film that I mentioned, and he was an extraordinary actor who was able to convey all kinds of humanity, although he was playing the part of a monster's
It's a tough game, but you
yes,
did keep going.
Yes, I was going too quick.
You were going well.
But you kept going for 34 seconds, Paul. And there are 26 seconds available still. And, Stephen, you challenge. Oh, I didn't ask if you a challenge.
Well, he rather broke down into a sort of hesitation,
right. Yes.
I think.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Stephen, you have the subject of horror films starting now.
After that great period that Paul alluded to, the Universal Studios era, there was, in the later periods of the 50s and 60s, a kind of renaissance. Hammer in Britain, of course, became very well known as a place for making films about Dracula and Frankenstein.
Pam Challenge.
No, I'm sorry, I got muddled up because Paul said...
I know, I was being very wicked in repeating what he said.
I apologise, I'm wrong.
So what we'll do, we'll be generous then, say we won't charge any points for that and say that, Stephen, you still have the subject. 9 seconds available. Horror films starting now.
John Carpenter in the 70s and subsequent 80s produced and directed and indeed even composed music for a number of very successful films. Halloween was the...
So Stephen Fry, speaking as the whistle went, has moved forward. He's equal with Paul Merton in third place. And Stephen, it's your turn to begin. The subject, social media. Tell us something about it. I think they feel it's an erudite subject, so they're giving it to you. Starting now.
I could hear all kinds of hearts sinking as soon as this subject was mentioned, and they do around the world. Social media has become a dirty phrase, hasn't it? We think of Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat, Facebook and other such services, as they call themselves, which have become really symbolic and iconic of the age in which we speak now. And many people believe they have a deleterious effect on society, that they hurt and they impinge upon what would be the natural intercourse that takes place between people in a sensible and sane way.
Paul Townsend.
Do you have a repetition of people?
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't be surprised, is the kind of word.
Yeah. Well, listen, Paul, that's
spotted.
Right.
Well spotted, sir.
So you got in, Paul, with 25 seconds to go. Another point for a correct challenge, of course. Social media starting now.
I don't even think about it.
No. I think the only generous thing to do there is to give Paul a bonus point because we enjoyed the mark.
Yeah, well done.
And say, Stephen, you had a correct challenge. Well, you tell us what it is, of course.
Yes, there was just a pause along sort of hesitation.
Social media is back for you, Stephen. 24 seconds starting now.
How wise Paul is not to know anything about it, because in this case, ignorance surely is bliss of a kind. I have a large number of...
Wait a minute, Pam challenge.
I quite like it. I get a lot of pleasure from it, and I don't think it's universally
bad. I think
bad.
We could say, Pam, that... quite a clever challenge, because to some people it is very enjoyable.
I know that. Yeah. I didn't say it wasn't. I never said it was a terrible thing. I merely said that in some cases ignorance is bliss, for his not knowing about it is not a bad thing. I didn't say social media is bad. How could I? I myself use it all the time.
You were saying that generally it's perceived
it
as a bad thing.
To be,
a
Is it to be deleterious?
Yes, that's
you
the
can
phrase
disagree
I
with
was
that
groping
perception,
for.
That is
Yes,
I agree with both of you. but I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to Pam on this and say she has a subject, a point, of course, and the subject of social media, 16 seconds, starting now.
I never wanted to go on social media, and I had my arm twisted by my publisher. But actually, I found it an interesting challenge to say something grammatical, hopefully funny, and concise in the amount of characters which I was allowed. I know that... Oh.
So, Pam Ayres was then speaking as the whistle went. Gain that extra point. And Jan, it's your turn to begin. The subject is my workout. My workout, 60 seconds if you need it, starting now.
My workout starts with some stretches. I have to stretch out every muscle in my body before I start the main event. And the larger part of the workout involves fat-burning exercises. And don't start on me, I know I need them. These workout...
Paul Challenge.
Was there a hesitation?
I think there was a hesitation there, I'm afraid, Jan.
I was just taking a breath and a stretch in the middle to...
You were illustrating what you were saying.
Yeah.
Which is not a good radio, actually.
No. You'd think I'd know that by now, wouldn't you, really?
Paul, correct challenge. 37 seconds available. My workout is starting now.
My workout consists mainly of doing Pilates twice a week, which is very much, as Jan was reporting earlier, a stretching exercise. So there are various positions that one can take up. And certainly, since I've started doing that particular discipline, I have felt myself a lot more limber than I was. Many years ago, I broke my leg and my hip is playing me up. But if I do indulge in this practice on Tuesdays and Thursdays...
Jan Jones.
Was there a repetition of practice?
Yes, that's right. Well, listen, Jan.
I think.
Paul?
I don't know. To be honest, I wasn't really listening. I'd heard it before.
So the only fair thing to do is to give Paul a bonus point for his what he said then. And Jan, we give you a point for an interruption. And you have 15 seconds if you need it. My workout starting now.
My workout involves diving into the swimming pool and doing 50 lengths of breaststroke, and then I do more swimming, and then I go...
Stephen Challenge.
Sort of the and thens,
I think.
And they also sort of...
I think swimming as well.
Right. Stephen, you've cleverly got in with 3 seconds to go. On my workout starting now.
Rising from the armchair and crossing the room.
Well, Stephen Fry speaking as a whistle when gained that extra point. He's one behind our joint leaders, Paul Merton and Pam Ayres, and Jan Ravens is coming behind Only one point separates them all, in other words. Pam Ayres, it's back with you to begin. The subject is the space race, starting now.
One thing that sticks in my mind about the space race between the USA and Russia is the fact that they sent dogs into space. One in particular was called Laika. She was a stray rescued, if you call it that, from the streets of Moscow because she was believed to be tough enough to survive the rigorous ordeal she was to be put through. This poor luckless animal was entrapped in increasingly smaller cages and subjected to massive centrifugal forces to prepare it for the dreadful ordeal when it was fired into space with no hope of return. And I wonder...
Stephen Challenge.
This is very good and very sad, incidentally, but this is about the Russian space programme, not the space race.
Oh, what a clever challenge.
The space race is specifically about Russia and America.
Yes. It was a very fast dog.
A very subtle and very intelligent challenge, and I think you're right, Stephen. I have to give you the benefit of the doubt and said that you have 17 seconds on the space race starting now.
The Soviet Union began it, really, and shocked America by sending a man out into space, Yuri Gagarin by name, and the USA had to respond in some fashion. It was a matter of pride, and in a sense, the proof that the capitalist system was better than the communist. I don't know if anyone today...
So Stephen Fry, in speaking as a whistle, Wayne gained that extra point and is moved ahead. He's 1 point ahead of Paul Merton, Pam Ayres and Jan Ravens. And Paul, we're back with you to begin. The subject, behind the scenes. Talk on it if you can, starting now.
Charlie Chaplin made a film in 1916 called Behind the Screen, which showed you what life was like in a film studio of that period. Hand-cranked cameras.
Oh, Jan Chance.
Repetition of film. Charlie Chaplin made a film and then a film...
Yes, absolutely.
Repetition. Well, listen, Jan, you've got him with 51 seconds to go on Behind the Scenes, starting now.
Behind the Scenes is very interesting and always audiences are very interested to...
Stephen.
Very. Repetition of very, I think.
I think you are right, yeah. 45 seconds, Stephen, for you on... Behind the Scenes, starting now.
Behind the Scenes at Just a Minute is an extraordinary sight for those privileged to go beneath and behind the curtain and have a look, because there's an extraordinary amount of budget expended on food, wine, entertainment for the panellists. We are laid on with a great sumptuous feast behind the scenes that I wish the audience...
Deviation. Could see. Come on, Pam.
This is not strictly true.
Complete deviation. Correct challenge, behind the scenes, 26 seconds available, starting now.
I'm very fond of a book, it's an old one now, called The Art of Coarse Acting by Michael Green, in which he describes the various hazards which may arise behind the scenes. And one of the problems often encountered is the collapse of the flats, the scenery vertical pieces. And he invented something called the human cleat.
So, Pam Ayres, speaking as a whistle, Wayne gained that extra point. She's moved into the lead alongside Stephen Fry. And Stephen, it's back with you to begin. The subject, Bruce Lee, that famous film star. Tell us something about him, if you can, in this game, starting now.
Bruce Lee is probably best known for his film Enter the Dragon and his shortened career as a martial arts film star. He started, I think, on television in The Green Hornet. He was from Hong Kong, where he was produced by Run Fat, as his name was, a Cantonese producer of a tremendous amount of these kinds of genre entertainment. But he raised it to a new level amongst certainly many people's view, and his death still is discussed to this day. Was it an aspirin poison effect? Was it in perhaps some other thing? Like, there's a story that he had his armpit glands, the sweating part of them, removed because it was ugly on the screen, and that he actually overheated, and this caused his early demise.
I think Stephen's been taken over by the spirit of Elvis Presley. Scientists prove there is life after death.
So we give you the bonus point for the laugh.
Yeah.
Then what's the challenge when the rules are just a minute?
Well, I don't suppose it's against the rules to start talking like Elvis Presley, so technically speaking, he hasn't broken any of the free
cardinal
rules.
He hasn't broken the actual basic rules. So you get your point, Paul, for your lovely interruption. Stephen, for being interrupted. And Bruce Lee, 11 seconds still available, starting now.
They talk sometimes of the curse on the Lee family, Bruce's own unfortunate
Jan, you challenge.
Hesitation.
We call that hesitation, yes, right. So, Jan, you've got him with 3 seconds to go on Bruce Lee, starting now.
I never liked Bruce Lee films that much. Mm.
So, Jan, speaking of the whistle, when you gain an extra point, you've moved forward, but it's all very close, only about 1 point separating all of them. And, Jan, it's your turn to begin. The subject is the corner shop, starting now.
The corner shop in the town where I grew up was run by Jean Parry and her husband Eric, and their daughter Elspeth was my best friend. So I often used to go round to the corner shop where Jean Parry... Just about to talk about the fudge that they sold in the corner shop.
There's a lovely way of getting out of it. You fudged the situation. Who's challenged, by the way?
I did.
Pam, you challenged, yes.
Yeah.
46 seconds, the corner shop, starting now.
Our corner shop was run by Mrs. Miles, and it mostly sold sweets, including pink prawns, sherbet lemons, fly-in saucers, and all manner of tooth-rotting delights. But I don't know how the corner shop survives today in the face of competition from the big boys, who have control of things like just-in-time delivery and the utmost freshness. How hard it must be for a young couple, or indeed an old one, to try and sustain business in the face of these enormous...
Paul, you challenge us.
Hesitation.
Yes, indeed. Yes. Right, Paul, you've got in cleverly with 7 seconds to go on the corner shop, starting now.
It was a dark and stormy night as I approached the corner shop. Mm. There were no lights on, but I could tell there was a shadowy figure inside.
So Paul Merton was then speaking as the whistle went. And Pam, we're back with you to begin. And the 60 seconds, if you need it, on The Pianist, starting now.
The first pianist I became aware of was Winifred Atwell, who was a lady from Trinidad with an enormous beaming smile, and when playing, she would wink at the camera, which was most endearing. After her came Liberace in my awareness, and he also had a wide grin if you could see him behind the various candelabra. Then came trotting along Russ Conway, and he had a tune called Side Saddle, which was immensely popular and shot to the top of the chart. And I myself decided that I would have piano lessons and went to a lady called Mrs. Swan. Shortly afterwards, however, I had a baby, but there is no connection between the two in this matter. And I found that instead of practicing scales, I would rather go to bed and have a good kip. This is a very common feeling, I think, amongst new mothers. Therefore...
So Pam Ayres took the subject and went with it the full 60 seconds without being interrupted. And she's moved into a lead. She's 1 point ahead of the other three. So I'll give you the situation as we move into the final round. Jan Ravens, who's played the game less than the others, as in a very strong fourth place. Strong in the sense that she's only 1 point behind Stephen Fry and Paul Merton, and they're only 1 point behind Pam Ayres, who's in the lead. And, Paul, it's your turn to begin. The subject is writing. 60 seconds available, starting now.
Writing is something I don't do a great deal of these days. Most of the shows I do on television and radio, a bit like this one, regard you as an ad libber rather than somebody who's created something beforehand as a piece of writing. When I have done writing in the past, I find, a bit like John Cleese describes it, as a process where your forehead starts bleeding until you get to the end of it. It can be a very tough task, writing. If you set yourself various jobs, you think to your, I'm going to get a big joke today, I'm going to sit down in front of a blank piece of paper and I'm going to continue to write until something comes to me. This has never worked. Writing, I find, is much better done in cooperation with somebody else, another person sitting there. My good friend John Irwin, the two of us were writing a rate...
Stephen Charles?
Two Johns, because John Cleese is a John as
oh,
well.
Yes, yes.
Oh. 18 seconds available. On writing, Stephen, starting now.
One of the most extraordinary things about writing is how recently it came to the human race. Language is only 50,000 years old, paleontoanthropologists tell us, and evolutionary psychologists also.
Jan Trance.
Deviation, that's not recent.
It is in all terms. I think that's incredibly recent. And writing is even 5,000
years. You're having a quiet conversation. I can't hear you.
Sorry, love. I was just saying that I was challenging for deviation because I didn't think it did sound recent. He was talking about sort of ancient times.
It's 1% of our life as a species. We were human beings for hundreds of thousands of years before we had language.
I know, but
writing.
Like I was saying in an earlier programme, I think, maybe, I find all that rather overwhelming, all that talk of universes and galaxies and light years and, you know, where we are in the spectrum.
Should you get a point for that? Because
yes.
You find it overwhelming?
Yes.
Fair enough. That's all right.
Yes.
So who challenged who and what?
I challenged Stephen wrongly, obviously, I've now been told, by Stephen, who obviously is the arbiter of justice on the programme, that it was a wrong challenge. So I apologise humbly and hand the subject back to him with due humility and grace.
Whatever we... We appreciate what you said.
Thank you.
And I'm going to be sort of... generous and rather conniving here, because it's lovely that we have three people in the lead, and one person trading, who's Jan Ravens. So, Jan, if I give you the benefit of the doubt and say you have a point for that, and another point to come, I hope, you might all finish up equal, which would be wonderful, wouldn't it? So I'm leaving it with you, Jan, writing, and... 6 seconds available, starting now.
The art of writing or calligraphy is dying out because so many children are using laptops and tablets.
So, as I said before, we had three people in the lead. Stephen Fry, Pam Ayres and Paul Merton, all equal. Jan was trailing by 1 point. She's still trailing by 1 point, but let's say they were all equal. I give a round of applause to all four of them. We do hope you've enjoyed this edition of Just a Minute. We thank our producer, Matt Strong. I thank Sarah Sharp, who's helped me with the score and the stopwatch and blown the whistle so well. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game, and deeply indebted to these four highly talented players of the game, Paul Merton, Pam Ayres, Jan Ravens, and Stephen Fry. From the audience, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and the team, goodbye, thank you, and tune in when we play... Just a Minute!